Welcome to the Grace Hour, a daily program. We're going to take you into some of the issues that affect your life as a believer, the challenges, and we want you to learn more about your faith in a practical way. My name is Pastor Steve Androlonis. I'm joined with Pastor Jason Moore here in the studio located at Greater Grace Church in Baltimore. And we're talking about a specific topic this week, the doctrine of suffering. And we're going to focus on some things that you can read, in particular a book that came out late 60s, early 70s, called Tortured for Christ. And this book was written by a Lutheran pastor, a Jewish man, married to a Jewish woman who was an atheist, but then was converted and became a Lutheran pastor in Romania. And then, as Romania capitulated to the communist rule in the late 40s after World War II, Romania had its Nazi occupation time, and then after that it had its communist takeover, basically. And Richard Wurmbrand was taken and put into prison, Tortured for Christ, this book, I can show you this, Tortured for Christ, this book has touched a lot of people, and Pastor Wurmbrand died in 2001, but he spent a lot of time sharing his experiences as a prisoner of for his faith. And so Pastor Jason and I are going to talk a little bit about how this book would affect you, persecution. Perhaps you've never really experienced the kind of persecution resisted in the faith to the point of shedding your blood. And so we're going to talk about this. We have a conversation about this book and about how this book, it's been made into a movie also in recent years. Voice of the Martyrs is an organization that Pastor Wurmbrand founded with $100 and 500 names on a mailing list. And in those days, you literally mailed the newsletter with envelopes and everything like that. Now, of course, things come to your inbox. But and I think his son, Michael, still runs an organization, although he's not affiliated with the Voice of the Martyrs at this point. But this is, you know, this is the kind of book that it does something to your heart and mind when you read it. Would you like to share something, Pastor Jason?
Yeah, Pastor Steve, I'm just blessed to be here with you and the listening audience. Just this book, I haven't looked at in years, and I read through it and I watched the movie, and it just affected me just in a fresh way. I think as Christians, we can get comfortable and just kind of forget maybe that there are people that are suffering for their faith, and it helped me. It sobered me up in the sense of just being thankful, put my trials and my situations into perspective. And I think if you read this book, it will help you put your life into perspective a little bit. Mm. Some things that really stood out. I mean, there's some great quotes I'd like to focus on at some point, but the suffering church, the persecuted church, one quote that Wurmbrand says is that there are no lukewarm members in the suffering church, in the underground church. And when you think about that takeover that happened in 1944, it's interesting how the communists approached the churches in Romania. They seduced the church, first of all, by offering the leaders more money. They took over, and they wanted to have like this relationship where we could work together. The only thing that they asked was to change what they believed in. So they seduced the church, and then the narrative of compliance was a big deal in that day, and it still is today in some subtle ways. And then they began to control and monitor the churches, because what they cannot control, they feared, or that unknown of what the church was propagating. They knew that if they could get a hold of the church, then they could get a hold of the masses. They could have a message to the masses. So that control led to illegal Bibles, illegal meetings. And if you read through this book and other books that you have there, You can see that they look like they're your friend at first. You know, they come in with all these niceties, but their objective is to control and to establish atheism. Because most communist governments, their communal perspective is there is no God. Atheism is the point of reference, and they attack or they go after anything that where they could lose control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just maybe I could say one other thing too. Just when you read through this book, you really get a perspective of the suffering mm-hmm. of those that suffer. I mean, each one of us has our trials and tribulations, so this is not meant to diminish anything you're going through. But I really saw this in a fresh light, that knowing the perspective of those that suffer really deepens our faith.
Yeah, the sense of persecution, the kind of relating to the kind of suffering that they had to do, the communist, their thinking was that the creation of a just and equitable human society requires that everyone focus on the horizontal, the here and now. And this is like, okay, churches can exist for a period of time until we start to indoctrinate them with this idea. And so the idea of being this lie that's perpetuated, that you can be so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good, this is really what the communists wrote over their efforts to silence the Christian witness, because their idea was that, you know, if the Christian is participating in Bible study, Bible reading, worship services, then he is not participating in the worker's paradise that they are trying. This is it. This is all you have. Everyone needs to be involved in this for the sake of equal human society. And so that's the way that they portrayed it. And, when they bring this to the churches, what we want is a more just society. But I think, like, you know, you've been in Ukraine and Poland, right? Did you live in both these? So both of those were...
Just Ukraine, but I've...
But you lived it there. So that part of the world is still recovering from, you know, it's been 1990. 1989 was the first real breakthrough with the fall of the Berlin Wall. And then, of course, that part of the world opened up as it had not been opened for decades from, you know, in the Soviet Union, for example, in the 20s, and then on through World War II, and then through, you know, and of course, communist governments still exist in at least strong forms in three places, North Korea, Cuba, and China, you know. And we know the kind of persecution. So to read a book like this, to open this book. Now, the thing we should tell you is, like, Richard Wurmbrand is kind in this. He spends the first couple chapters talking about the kind of suffering that was there, the kind of abuse that was heaped upon them, the kind of denial of food, the kind of torturous punishment that was inflicted on them. The attempt to get them to expose the underground church, that was really the reason for the torture, right?
Yeah, I mean, you use a good word, kindness. Like, that's one thing that's so obvious. Like, he loved the Russian people. I mean, imagine living in a country, a million Russians are occupying your country. You can be obviously upset, angry. Hatred could really be the ingredient that you fight with every day, but Richard Wurmbrand, really from God, he learned a lot of the Russian language just to minister to the people, and he had pity on them. That atheism, that you're an atheist, well, you, in so many words, you have no one to thank, you have no one to worship. And he says this, he says, you know, you can kill the body, but you cannot kill our love. I mean, again, he just really had this incredible love he'd received this love from God and was able to love his enemy. And you see all throughout the book, even before he's captured, and then while and he stands up. This is really amazing. In the beginning part of the book, he stands up in front of all of these other churches where the communist leaders are talking and seducing them with more money and like, work with us, we'll work with you, and just. And he gets up and he just declares his faith in glorifying Christ and that he serves only one God. And that catalyst, that after that meeting, after that declaration, he was taken away.
Yeah.
And his ministry became 14 years in the prisons, as we've said, ministering, doing Bible studies. And he said, I've worked out an agreement with the guards. You beat me and I preach the gospel. You beat us and we preach the gospel. And that's quite a thought.
Yeah. Now the thing, interesting thing, I don't know if he mentions it in this book. Maybe he does. He mentions that he was taken captive. He was arrested on February 29th, 1948.
Yeah.
Which is he remembers the date very well. And he said in a couple of, it's kind of interesting, here at Greater Grace, we have a history with this, with Richard Wurmbrand and the Wurmbrand family. Richard Wurmbrand spoke here in Baltimore a couple of times. In fact, a week before I was married, he was speaking in the very church that my wife and I got married, Hamilton Presbyterian Church over on Harford Road here.
Hmm.
We got together with that church. We were a church. The Bible Speaks in Baltimore, led by Pastor Steve Duff. At that time, we had Richard Wurmbrand there, and we enjoyed that. And he came and appeared here. And after our ministry, Greater Grace was established here in Baltimore. He appeared. He was here speaking. But I remember him talking about this February 29th. It's important because he makes the point that in the translation of the Bible that he read, fear not appears, or do not be afraid appears 366 times, one for every day of the year and even one for the leap year.
Yeah.
So this is like a big thing. And if you're reading some of the Christmas stories now and you're watching our podcast, our talk here, and you're reading some of the Christmas stories, you know that fear not is a part of the Christmas story. Fear not, Mary, the child. You'll be overshadowed by the Holy Spirit. You've found favor with God. Fear not, Joseph, to take Mary as your wife. And then Richard Wurmbrand said, fear not appears in the Bible so many times. So this was the kind of the scriptural meditation that he managed. That's one thing we should say. When you read the book, you don't get the gory details only. Yeah. You also get like a good sense of what kept him in those situations. And then be prepared, because you know he puts the finger on the Western world, right?
He does. Before we go there, I just think of one thing he said. He said, God doesn't judge us for what we have endured, but how we love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a real capstone for the whole book, because I mean, he talks about meeting with other prisoners, and they have these shackles, these chains, and they're banging their chains, and they use that as music for their songs. I mean that, just the depth of this, the boldness, the conviction, the value they put on the Word of God and their time together. They had agreed that, okay, I'm going to die, but before I die, there's going to be a ministry. There's going to be a ministry to the guards. I mean, I think of another story. He's there praying. The guard looks in on him. And he sees Richard Wurmbrand there praying, and he opens the door, starts yelling at him, saying, why are you praying? You have nothing left. Your wife's in jail. Your family is gone, and everything's stripped away. He says, who are you praying for? And he says, I was praying for you. And the guard just gets quiet and retracts from the cell, closes the door. Like, his ministry was one of love, and that love in truth, and that love in that love that was based in God's mind and God's heart. You know, you mentioned earlier about the Ukraine. Our church was in a region called Pidzamche, and it's a place where 140,000 Jews were murdered for their faith. And in this Jewish ghetto, they call it. Our church was there, and that was something we saw like it was a monument and very much real, and something to be remembered because history repeats itself if it's not honored or learned from. And in the Ukraine in particular, we see through World War II that it was run over by the Russians and then run over by the Germans. And then there's a lot of pain and suffering even today with the present situation that really they need our prayers. But we see that, you know, you quote, no fear, that Psalm 56:3, he quotes that I am afraid, but I will not fear. I will trust in you. So I think fear can be easily understood, right? You're there, you're not eating, you're drugged, you're beaten, you're threatened, you're coerced. And again, we haven't experienced that in the West.
No, we haven't had that we haven't been pushed to that edge or those limits yet. We haven't resisted unto blood so much. Yeah.
But he says there in page 80, he says that the West is asleep. And I think that's our challenge with all the prosperity and blessings that we have, and we have them because of the goodness of God, that the church has what it has, not to for itself, but to give it away, to reach out to soul win. And Richard Wurmbrand says that. He says that one of the objectives of the underground church is that he would make each convert a soul winner. Prayer was his only escape. And more than his own life, he valued the Bible. I mean, these are things that we as Christians, we have maybe 10 Bibles at home, right? We have...
at least, maybe a variety of 10 different translations there. What do you got, 70 on your phone? Maybe it's more than that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 270 nowadays. You can pick your iPhone out. You can pick whatever translation you want. There you go.
I mean, we have it in excess, and He says there's two types of Christians, and I love this too. I'm quoting a lot from this because I got a lot out of it. He says there are two types of Christians, those that sincerely believe in God, and then number two, those that sincerely believe that they believe. Mm. So, I mean, I think the second one, it could be really, that's a sobering thought. Like, do I believe in God? Therefore, if I believe in God, then love is in my ministry. Hunger is in my attitude. So in the West, I believe in the United States, people say the United States has been evangelized. I say right now the world has come to our nation. We have a huge, amazing opportunity to minister in our country, and it's very open. It's exceptionally open. And we have to wake up the Christians, I think. Mm-hmm. I know I need that. Complacency, comfortability, comfortable with the uncomfortable. You know, these things, we need iron sharpens iron. We need something that's going to wake us up to spiritual realities. So
the point, you know, the point of him writing this book was to give like sort of an accurate record of his life in the prison system and the lengths that they went to try and silence the witness and create again. This is all designed because of the kind of society that they thought that they were shaping for the world. Just you know, it just was, you know, it just goes back to the writings of Karl Marx. Actually, Richard Wurmbrand wrote a series of books. One of them was about the Satanism, the subtle and somewhat blatant Satanism that was involved in the life of Karl Marx, you know, Marxism, and then this idea of, Marxist atheist economic activity. This is like, you know, as we could see, like, through the way that people think today have been affected by, some French philosophy, very much about turning, you know, yourself and the full self-fulfillment. And then also, of course, the origin of the species, this Darwinism that has, infected like biology and academic institutions about where people came from. And then also the Marxism, the idea of Marxism economically. So you have one thing about self-centeredness, another thing about your origin, and then the next thing about your economic life, and then of course the next part of that is Sigmund Freud and his disciple, more his disciple, the guy who comes after him, talks about the sexuality aspect of these things have sort of created the storm that we see in the Western world nowadays. Is like these kind of questions about gender, about sexuality, about equality and justice. All of these things have been layered over the course of a couple centuries now. So you're talking about the 1700s, the French Revolution, and the French philosophy, and it being seen as the highest kind of thinking. And this is where we've gotten to. And what Tortured for Christ shows is when somebody gets to a certain level of power and has a certain amount of influence, as it did in these nations, Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia, Romania, Yugoslavia, that's those of you who are 20-something, you might not even have remembered that was even a country. Yes. At some point, but this is, that country has split into several ethnic-centered countries, Serbia being one of them, Croatia being one of them, Montenegro. Zagreb, yeah. Yeah, right? So all of those were one country called Yugoslavia, and, all of them had this, varying forms of kinds of communist ideology. And this, how do human beings treat each other this way? And it wasn't new, because we see that the Roman government treated the early church and the people under their control the same way.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about the core of communism, it elevates man's goodness, man's communal responsibility one for another. But one major thing that they're doing is they're doing it without God. They're doing it without the understanding of God. So I remember in the Ukraine, we were door knocking, and I met a man, and we spent some time with him. Our conversation actually went several hours, and he was a preacher in the 50s and 60s. I'm sorry, in the 60s and 70s, excuse me, and he had a church, and what would happen would he would be asked to write his message, and the KGB would look at the message to make sure that it did not reflect anything against the government, but also they would manipulate his message to have a communist undertone to the listeners. And this man was under such guilt and shame because he did it, because his life was in jeopardy. And he came into our ministry, and he's now with the Lord, but he was so released, and that's what grace does in a person's life. But I just want to say this about about Tortured for Christ again, that Sabina was an amazing, amazing helpmate. She said to him, in that speech, she said, Richard Wurmbrand said, if I say something, you're not going to have a husband. And she said, well, I want a husband that's not a coward. So she had some spiritual grit. This book is filled with spiritual grit, and it challenges you, because when you look through the history, as Pastor Steve just said, today we have a lot of communist undertones. We do. We have a lot of things. I remember talking to a young person, they had a hammer and sickle on their shirt, and I said, hey, I said, you know what, just got talking with them. I said, what's up with your shirt there? And he didn't even know what it was. Mm-hmm. And again, these symbols, hammer and sickle, is the communist sign, for Russia anyway. They have no idea. Symbolism's been revised. And I think the danger we have in our day and age is that we must understand our history so that we don't repeat it, because the church is being seduced today. The people are in a neo-pagan, right, Pastor Steve? A neo-pagan. There's like no absolute truth. There's like all these different Baal worships going on, and there's a lie. And the lie is, and I love how Leonard Ravenhill, he's a great guy too. He said this. He's now with the Lord, a great preacher. He said, we are too busy chasing the mice while lions devour our land. And I think this book just kind of shows us what is the true reality. Well, the true reality is love. The true reality is Christ. The true reality is my Bible. My true reality is heaven and not consumption. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I can just keep going here.
No, no, I think, you know, that's the thing. When you get towards the end of the book, you get like you get Pastor Wormbrand challenging the nature of complacency and just thinking that this could never happen in a Western society. So you read a book like this. I mean, how did this, you know, when Richard Wormbrand was ransomed, basically, he spent 14 years in this prison. 2 years of that was in solitary confinement. And there was another couple of years when he spent it in what was called the dying room, which means that they had drugged him, beat him so much, and his respiratory, they just felt like he's going to die any moment. And he was put into this room with dying men. And so for 2 years, this was an amazing ministry for him. You'll read this, like, what did he do? He had to be turned over. He had to have help to walk, to do anything, to have his clothes changed. I don't know if they were even given baths, but were they allowed to wash every now and then? He needed help with all of that. But every time a new person came into the room, it was another opportunity to lead someone to Christ. And that's the hopeful part of the book, is like the crisis that he's under, the persecution that he's under, did not diminish this soul-winning heart that he had for the people. Yes, he's praying for communists, prison guards. He's also praying for the different prisoners that are dying in the room with him. And, this book was just the first of many that he wrote. He wrote another book that's one of my favorites. It's called With God in Solitary Confinement. And the way that I got this book is Catonsville, at a church on the other side of Baltimore, west side of Baltimore in Catonsville, went to a meeting. Richard Wormbrand was speaking. He was speaking afterwards. He's talking to people, and his wife, who's about 4'2". I mean, really, she was like a very small woman, but she manned the book table. And like, you know, and people would buy books, and I bought a couple of books, and I felt this tug on my shirt, and it was her, and she had this book, and she pressed it to my chest and said, "You need this book." And I have it here. It's like sort of falling apart. I've read it several times now. So I got this probably not early 1980s. I was married already, so it must have been 1984, 85 when I got this. But she pushed this book. She said, "You need this book." I said, "Well, I don't have," but she said, "You take." And then she grabbed another book and handed it to me. So I was going to buy two books. I wound up with four, but this one, it's really interesting. Richard Wormbrand being alone with rats and mice and insects, he would prepare every night a message to preach to his cell. And so every night it would be sermon time for Richard Wormbrand, and he would preach a sermon. And these are the ones that he remembered. He couldn't write anything down, so he remembered a couple of dozen of these and put them in this book. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is like very interesting story about this. Years later, after Richard Wormbrand was released, and he's touring the United States and Canada, he's in Canada at a meeting and talking about this book. And in that room, there was a man who had been in jail, and he heard a message in his cell. So Richard Wormbrand is in Romania preaching to the atmosphere. No one's listening. This man's in a cell in Canada, and he heard the message in his cell in Canada that Richard Wormbrand preached in his cell in Romania. So this is like one of those like miracle kind of stories that, you know, that like, okay, so Richard Wormbrand is all alone. He doesn't think he has a ministry, but the atmosphere. And I was like, well, how can that happen? And it says, well, Second Kings tells us, like, there's a, what is it? It's Elisha. Elisha hears the words that you speak in your bedroom. The birds carry it to him, or the something. It's like, so, hey, we talk on cell phones now. Like, it's like, you know, the environment for voice to travel wirelessly existed. And so this is, you know,
wow.
Now, I've heard that story. I think it was a pastor in our church that told it in a convention. But this is, you know, this
That's
is a story.
Amazing.
It's like Richard Warren Brand would preach. It preached one of these messages, and the guy got the book, and he said, I heard that message. You know, was he imagining it? I don't, you know, can miracles happen? That's, I guess, a big question for you. Could you be like a miracle believer, a believer in the Bible, and they're going to hustle you off? I don't know. I mean,
we can't know, limit God, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and the power of the devil, how pervasive will it come in the Western world? But
Pastor Steve, is there a message in there I'm remembering called The Beauty of Nothing?
I don't know if that's, I know that he preached that. I know that he preached that here. That was one of his messages that he preached here. I don't see that in this one.
Yeah, if you're listening today, and you are, maybe Google that, The Beauty of Nothing. He talks about being in the cell, having the imaginary cup and the bread, and just doing communion in his cell.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And again, the way he just kept himself, I mean, again, he says in another place that, you know, he barely could speak or remember the Bible. He only remembered very few words, but one of the words was love. And just the way he, you know, it would be easy, I would imagine, to give up, to cave in, to renounce, to give the names. That's one thing I saw or read as well, that the people in the underground church were very, they kept their confidentialities. They it was more important for them to die with honor than to give up names, and other people would die in that, you know, because of them. But again, that just the depth that Richard Wurmbrand had, and the way he kept loving, everything was an opportunity to preach. And I would just say this, I go back to what was said earlier, God doesn't judge us on what we have endured, but how we love. So kind of like, what are we, what is our ministry in what we're, where we're at now? What are we, how are we ministering in the condition and place that we're in? I talked with a lady recently here that's been struggling for months with a certain health condition, and it can eclipse you. Pain can eclipse your thinking and these types of things. But what a ministry you have in this place. Maybe your ministry is to God. Maybe your ministry is to your family because you can't get out. Maybe your ministry is on the phone praying with somebody. Maybe your ministry is online. You have a ministry, right? Mm-hmm. We have a ministry. And, you know, in this book, again, I'm just quoting all bits and pieces here, but three things that the underground church is saying to us: don't abandon us, don't forget us, and don't write us off. Don't abandon us, don't forget us, don't write us off. And Pastor Steve, we just had like a day here in Greater Grace.
Yeah, persecuted church. Prayer for the persecuted church, early November.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that, Hebrews 3:13 or 13:3 that says, maybe it's 3:13, that says, remember me in my bonds, right? Remember me, I could quote it, but maybe you have it memorized. But again, just remembering those. 13:3. It says, remember the prisoners as if we were chained with them, those who are mistreated, since yourselves are also in this body. Like, I don't know, that verse struck me like, maybe, I don't know, what would we do in that situation? I guess is maybe the common question, but I don't know if that's the right question, right?
No, it is. I mean, you really can't have an expectation of endurance until you're asked to endure. John Huss, who was murdered, burned at the stake for standing up for what he believed against, a religious tribunal. He tried to hold his hands over the flame of a candle, you know, trying to train himself for what he was going to endure. And he realized that he wasn't going to get the grace for that until he got to that place. Richard Wurmbrand talks about, like, you know, the physical suffering he experienced and how he endured. His hope, and I guess this, you know, probably the souls that he was committed to communicating the gospel to also kept him vibrant enough to survive this and weather this. And then, others didn't survive. That's yeah. what it tells. He tells this story that some didn't survive. They just perished. Sometimes they were beaten to death in front of people to make, they were trying to, the idea, why was the torture done? The torture was done in order to get information, in order to arrest more of these believers. And, the book of Acts talks about this. When Paul is arrested and taken captive, they're stretching him out to beat mm-hmm. him to try and get information. Now, this is humans do this to each other. It's a wonder to us, but humans do this to each other. They push the threshold of pain in order to get information that they can use against others. And this was the whole idea. Wormbrandt was taken. He was taken to a place. His wife didn't know where he was. A few months later, his wife was taken, and his son was being indoctrinated as an orphan. That's part of the book. How Mihai stands up for the faith and speaks against the communist atheistic thing, turning Karl Marx's words into theology, so how Michael survived is also a part of this. A young man, he was 11 when his mother and father are taken from him, and a couple years he's living under this sort of indoctrination, and he survives it.
Mm.
So, that's a part of the story, of course. I don't know why I said that, but here
well,
we are.
He suffered well. I mean, right? He suffered yeah. well. I mean, to think, like, again, how would we respond if we had whatever scenario? And I like what you said. It's like God will give the grace for what He has called us to do. I mean, or called us to endure. You know, getting back to this word propaganda. It's an interesting word. That's kind of been revised in a lot of ways, but I remember studying this recently. Propaganda is not only the twisting of the truth, but it's to cause the hearer to question everything and to ultimately believe nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, in our age today, we're seeing the inconsistencies of leaders. We're seeing a lot of contradictions, maybe people saying one thing, doing another, and the trust of governments, the trust of even the church in some regards, people not only will doubt what's being said, they will not trust who's saying it. And I think this is really an action of the devil, because if they can bring in an insecurity and a distrust for authority, then again, there is a confusion that comes in and an abstractness. So, I mean, communism, what does it do? It strips away creativity. It strips away identity. It takes a full generation, really, for a country to really recover from that. But propaganda, what propaganda are we influenced by, or are we subjected to? It's a good question. It's a good question to check ourselves.
I think it's language. Propaganda, if we wanted to get like, it's language as a utility. Mm-hmm. As opposed to an expression. And really, like when you talk about propaganda, it involves, the messaging, the imaging, everything is like designed to facilitate. These are, when you hear people use these kinds of words, these are social, what do we call that?
Memes?
Well, I mean, it's like, I'm trying to think of that there's a, there's a way of like trying to, this usually starts in like sort of a classroom setting, academic setting, where you, I'm trying to think of the realm of study that it is. I can't remember what it is, but it's not socialism. There's another idea, the studying of society. I had to take a class in college on it. And, you think about social studies, we had yeah. that, like, and how society operates and that kind of thing. And so language can be used and we see it. If you are aware of it, then you can avoid it, because it starts with like flattery, and then the perpetuating of certain half truths, and those lead to three quarters truths, and then you get trapped into outright outright lies, which is the way the progression of like turning the Jews into the enemies of the German people, which is what Hitler and his propaganda did. So, you know, you could see that this is, you know, what Richard Wurmbrand was a victim of the propaganda. You know, he was the victim of the propaganda. Yeah. And this was, you know, he was not being, and this is what they try to do, is like, you are not believing the messaging that we are sending, so we have to erase you.
Yes.
And 1984, the novel by George Orwell talks about this, like the way that groupthink is one of the words that he invented in there. And this is the whole idea, is like, we are creating a groupthink through propaganda. Mm. And like, if you are not thinking with the group, then you become an enemy of the group and a danger to the group. And so Christians were considered dangerous. And Christians were considered dangerous in the book of Acts to the religious leaders, and that's why Jesus was crucified, and then also to the Roman Empire.
Yes.
So Richard Wurmbrand is just was a chapter in a long legacy of you know, the world system, the cosmic system of the devil, attempting to erase the message some way and get the group to think. And this, when there's ultimate groupthink, we know that this is, the end has come.
Yeah.
You know, the beast
thought
is crimes, in control.
Right?
Huh?
Thought crimes.
Yes.
Just
any of that. Just trying to, sociology. Well, that's what it's
there
called.
There it is.
Sociology. Not biology, but sociology. There we go. I had to take a course in sociology. It was really kind of interesting. And I've told this story in a couple of places where they had a fence around a playground for third graders, and they played all over the place, swung on the monkey bars, ran to the edge of the fence, and then one day the fence was gone, and without the boundaries, you know, the kids became group, you know.
Yes.
So it's like, this is like, the society can, you know, and this was a academic experiment that used real third graders, which is like, that was the thing that my class was like, what prompted somebody to do this and use third graders as guinea pigs? Like,
I love that illustration. I mean, it again, it's all experimental, but if in a totalitarian government, you are programmed how to think and how to act, and if you don't follow, you're even told what to think. And I think this is what happens after post-communist societies. People want you to tell them how to think, what to do, where to live. And I see that even in our own nation, where when we lose our critical thinking skills and someone's telling us what to do and acting for us without really knowing the end of the matter, it's really dangerous. You know, again, in the book, I think of this statement that he says, and I don't think it's actually sourced from him, but blood of the martyrs is the seedbed of the church. Who said that?
That's Tertullian.
Yeah.
That is like early church father. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think of what the devil meant for evil to destroy these dear people. I think of the Jews, the 6 million, 6 million Jews in World War II, 20 million Russian Jews. That Stalin was a monster. And just the paranoia and all of the horrific history. Some people even say, oh, that didn't even happen. This is where revisionism is so dangerous. It's like, wow. But this book just keeps our perspective so clear that that we have such a valuable Bible, and the souls of men are worth more than the whole world, and the love of God in truth is how we win people.
It's true.
It's incredible.
So that's what we've been trying to talk with you about. In the area of suffering, persecution, like, what do you need? Like, I would suggest that you have some of these books on your bookshelf. I don't know what books you read. That's what we're here to, that's what why we had this discussion. It's an important book. Could this happen today? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But this is what human beings can do to each other in the right context. Like I said, With God in Solitary Confinement, it's out there. I recommend it. Another book, Fox's Book of Martyrs, came out around the Puritan era, after the reign of Bloody Mary in England, and many people were burned at the stake for their faith, and for, you know, William Tyndale, in fact, was burned at the stake and strangled and burned for producing an English version of the New Testament, and it was working on the Old Testament too. So so these are things that you know, in our faith. And another one, Martyr of the Catacombs. Underground church really was underground. This is like a novel, but it's like very powerful. And if you can read these kind of things, I think they can, you know, they'll help your heart, stimulate your heart, because the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And the church grew amazingly underground, and then it became official in the 300s, and that's a church history lesson that we could have on another day. But I want to thank Pastor Jason for being a part of the Grace Hour program today. And we want to thank you for watching today. And you can subscribe to the show at YouTube or on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And we're a ministry of Greater Grace Church in Baltimore. Feel free to join us for church services on Sunday, 9, 11 in the morning, 6:30 in the evening. We also have a midweek service every Wednesday at 7. Thank you for being a part of the Grace Hour listening. Share this all over the place. Thanks for watching.